It's the bass move.
Thank you very much for tuning in to Campus FM. The frequency is 103.7. You are listening to It's Debatable. I, Darren Katskuti, am going to be your host for the next half hour. Today we are discussing European Union federalism here on It's Debatable. I will be having with me two special guests from the International Relations Department at the University of Malta. I am referring to Ian Borch and Christian Tanti, who are second-year international relations students. I welcome you both to It's Debatable.
Thank you for the invite.
Thank you.
I welcome you both to It's Debatable, and I hope you'll enjoy the next half hour with our listeners. We shall be touching on issues of national sovereignty, the economic benefits, and of course the political benefits of having a federalist union. Later on in our show, we'll also be airing an interview by Daniel Hannan, a British Conservative member of the European Parliament, as he was interviewed by the Taxpayer Alliance of the United Kingdom about the subject which we shall be discussing today. And we hope that you will find it also relevant to the discussion which we shall be conducting. As you know, the vision of a federalist union was much motivated by the preceding divisions and war in Europe, which brought a total socio-political and economic disruption of the whole continent. And this was basically the basis for an evolution of a federalist union. How far do you agree with this statement, Ian?
Yes, in fact, federations today are considered as forces to prevent wars and foster peace. Therefore, by having a federal European Union, regional cooperation becomes more evident. Actually, from the onset of the EU, we have seen a new Europe, embedded in an institutional framework upon which cooperation was to follow. In fact, today it is an EU composed of diverse central institutions, each of which hold those powers which traditionally were coordinated by the same national governments.
Do you believe that at this point also the founding fathers like Germany, Italy and the other four founding members of the European Union played an important role in putting a federalist vision?
In fact, they shared a federalist vision, always with the aim to bring as much as possible stability and prosperity. Through time, the same vision was developed to cater for new institutions like the European Parliament, the EU Commission, the Court of Justice and so on, which were also to deed upon diverse projects and initiatives related to environment, security issues and the economy. Negotiations, rather than being conducted on bilateral agreements between governments, this would be based on a new level. For instance, commissioners should not work for their national interest, far from that. They should work in the interest of the whole European community. It was central in pushing vital projects which brought diverse tangible results. An example would be the single market economy, which led the economy to prosper. Moreover, the European Parliament is also another institution which completed to its sufficient democratic legitimacy.
Christian, I would like to include you now in the discussion here on Federalist Union. Here Ian is taking a rather positive approach, but I would like to touch upon one statement which he made, that having a federal union, a regional cooperation becomes more evident. How far do you agree with this statement, though?
Yeah, although I think having a federal union can result in positive impacts on having a regional cooperation, in my opinion, which I'm taking the negative aspects of it, I think that also having a regional cooperation can leave a bigger space for more conflict. Therefore, this will occur because we have a lot of different actors coming from different political backgrounds and cultural backgrounds and languages and etc.
Of course, the number of political actors would then increase.
Increase, definitely.
Mm-hmm. And do you think that it would become even more severe once certain candidate countries manage to join the European Union, if the European Union grows with more than 27 members?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, policies to pass from legislation definitely become more difficult, and obviously not every member state is going to be quite happy or happy with all the policies passed. Not every country is going to be impacted positively by certain policies, while others will be impacted negatively, maybe others will be impacted positively. So.
Christian, do you think that it is acceptable to give away the national sovereignty of European states?
Yes, Darren, I can't understand how certain people sometimes think that national sovereignty is not something of the present or something of the past which has to do away, has to be removed. One can say that national sovereignty is a component which cannot be separated from the culture of a nation, which after all in itself is a value of great importance for individuals.
Christian, also, do you think that if Europe became federal, do you think that this will help Europe as a whole economically, in terms of economic terms?
Yeah, okay, although there can be positive outcomes, that's, we cannot deny it for sure. But however, there may still be negative impacts of the processes of the Europe becoming federal. Regarding the economic sector, if as a federation Europe will adopt a policy that might be risky for a minority of the member states, for example, a particular economic depression can occur in a particular state, like what happened, for example, in Greece recently. And this problem, this depression, could manifest itself on a larger scale in the United States of Europe, as one may refer to it then. Mm-hmm. Obviously, this is because Europe will become more federal than the economies of the member states. We rely more on each other than they are relying on each other now.
So what you are saying is that Europe would have one major economy, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So, Ian, what do you think about this important economic aspect which Christian has just talked about? He basically mentioned the negative aspects of having one major European economy, but don't you think that there would be a stronger insurance for economic and trade prosperity?
Yes, for sure. Yes, yes.
A federal union?
While a federation secures the barriers for trade, it basically, despite controlling, demanding better standards of behavior from the multinational companies, it would ensure citizens better prospects related to fair wages and good working conditions. Recently in the EU we have seen a project evolving, being the so-called the EU single market economy, which brought numerous benefits for both the businesses and the consumers. A new project which, while guaranteeing free trade, it unites all national economies of Europe into a joint single economy. Hence, all in all, I think that it would ensure an open Europe without any barriers for citizens to invest.
Thank you very much for those comments, and I thank you for evolving the discussion on EU federalism today. We shall now stop for a short break. Coming up right after the break, we'll be having our we'll be airing actually our interview with Daniel Hannan, who is a British Conservative MEP. He was interviewed by the Taxpayer Alliance of the United Kingdom about the subject which we are discussing today. I would also like to remind our listeners that they can send in their questions and comments on our email, which is info@mersa.org.mt, in order to participate in our discussion today. I invite you to stay tuned to Campus FM. I welcome you back. You are listening to It's Debatable on Campus FM. The frequency is 103.7. I am Darren Katkuti, and I'm your host for today's show of It's Debatable. Today we are discussing the prospects of EU federalism, and I have with me in the studios Ian Borch and Christian Tanti, who are both second-year international relations students at the University of Malta. Remember that you can join in our conversation by sending in your questions and comments on our email info@mirsa.org.mt or else by logging our online forum on mirsa.org.mt. And we shall now be listening to an interview of Daniel Hannan, who is a British Conservative member of the European Parliament, and as he was interviewed by the Taxpayer Alliance of the United Kingdom about the subject of Britain being outside the European Union. And he basically agrees with this statement, and he argues against the prospect of European Union federalism.
First of all, Daniel, I'd like to start by asking, where would you like to see Britain's relationship with the EU in 10 years' time?
I'd like to have an independent Britain outside the European Union, trading with its friends and allies, in a military bloc with them, cooperating with them intergovernmentally, but being an independent country, living under its own laws and its own parliament. But, you know, being an independent country is only a means to becoming an independent people. I don't want to get power back from Brussels and then leave it festering in Whitehall. Having got the powers back, having got the jurisdiction back to this country, I want to then push it downwards and outwards to local councils, or better yet, to individual citizens. Now, there's a whole bunch of things you can do to make the act of voting matter again more in this country, to make people feel that their institutions are more responsive. You can have self-financing councils, you can have local referendums on things, you can have recall rights, and you can have citizens' initiatives, and you can have an end to the state monopolies in education and in healthcare, and you can have elected local sheriffs. None of those things is possible as long as 84% of all our laws are being passed in Brussels, not just by people that we don't vote for, but by people that nobody votes for, by European commissioners who are deliberately invulnerable to public opinion. So, yeah, let's get the power back from the EU, but let's not replace rule by unelected Eurocrats in Brussels with rule by unelected Quangocrats in Whitehall. Let's become properly a sovereign democracy again, in which we have restored honour and purpose to the act of voting, and dignity to our legislature and freedom to our citizens.
And some people would argue that leaving the EU would have massive implications in terms of trade and leaving the common market. What would you say to them?
But you know, we're always being told that half of our trade is with the EU, and yeah, that's, I mean, it fluctuates a bit, but it's roughly 50%. What is much less rarely mentioned is the balance of that trade. Since we joined the EU in 1973, we have been, over that period as a whole, in surplus with every continent in the world except Europe. We have to make up in what we sell to Australia and North America and South America and Africa and Asia, what we run in our current account deficit with the EU. We've run an average cumulative trade deficit with the EU over the period of our membership as a whole of £30 million per day. Right? Now, it is not normal in any commercial transaction for the salesman ultimately to have the upper hand over the customer. In very blunt terms, whether or not EU membership has been good for Britain, British membership has been very good for the EU. The other member states are doing much better out of cross-channel trade than we are. And so I think their incentive in any secession talks, if you like, in any renegotiation, would be the same as ours, which is to maximize cross-border trade and prosperity. Final thought on this. And I think this is the killer statistic. There are four members of the European Free Trade Association: Liechtenstein, Switzerland, Norway, and Iceland. Every single one of those countries sells more per capita to the EU than we do. Right? Switzerland sells more than twice as much per head to the EU from outside as the United Kingdom does from inside. And that is the knockdown answer to anyone who says that our exports to the EU are dependent on our participation in common political structures.
Some people might also argue that Britain would be diminished as a world power if it were to leave the EU. What would you say to those critics?
Look at much smaller countries than us. You know, Norway has a population of 4 million, and its diplomats are active in Southeast Asia, in the peace settlements there. They brought about the negotiation in Sri Lanka. They negotiated the Israel-Palestine Accords at Oslo. They are more powerful because they are independent than they would be as one part of the EU. Now, if that is true of 4 million Norwegians, how much truer is it of a country of 60 million people, a trading maritime nation, a nation whose colonizing and enterprising energies have touched every continent? You know, we're not a tiny little offshore island, as the Euro enthusiasts sometimes claim. We're the fourth military power on the planet. We're one of 5 members of the UN Security Council. We have unparalleled links with the United States, the Commonwealth, the rest of the English-speaking world. You know, how much bigger do we have to be before we're able to survive running our own affairs in our own interests? And why is it only in the United Kingdom that it is somehow considered immoderate or swivel-eyed or nostalgic to make this argument? You know, there are 199 states and territories in the world, of which 172 are not members of the European Union. Right? And in all of those other ones, it's considered a normal, natural, healthy thing to rule yourself through your own democratic mechanisms and procedures. New Zealand is not planning to merge with Australia, as far as I'm aware. But they don't go around saying to the New Zealand politicians, "Oh, you Austro-skeptics, when are you going to join the modern world? When are you going to get over your hang-?" You know, Japan is not planning to amalgamate with China. But they're not attacked as Sino-skeptics who haven't, you know, got over the fact that they've lost their empire. It is a natural, healthy thing to want to be able to hire and fire the people who pass your laws. And there are some tiny little countries out there who are doing very well living under those arrangements. I think the United Kingdom is capable of doing the same.
And what do you think Britain's relationship with the EU will actually be like in 10 years' time?
Funnily enough, I think if we have secured an amicable divorce, which I think is very possible, I think it would be a much healthier and friendlier relationship than it is today. Today, our relations with the rest of the EU are soured by constant arguments when the other countries want to do something, and Britain, under any government, to be fair, whichever the party is in power, is the more reluctant one, is therefore seen as the whinging little child at the back who doesn't want to go along with everybody else. You would solve that problem immediately when you change the basis of our membership terms. The EU would lose a bad tenant and gain a good neighbour. No one, as far as I know, is arguing that Britain should stop having friendly, amicable relations with its immediate allies and its biggest trading partners. The choice is not between being subsumed into a European state and complete sort of isolation where you don't talk to anyone else. The choice is between carrying on down this road towards a federal Europe or having bilateral, friendly, economic, commercial links with our friends on the continent. You know, I don't say these things as an anti-European. I speak French, I speak Spanish, I've lived and worked all over the continent. I want to have the friendliest, most productive links that we can have with the countries on our doorstep. But I think we can do that much better if we talk on the basis of mutual interests and collaboration to achieve common goals than if we are squashed into undemocratic structures that neither our people nor theirs have asked for.
Daniel Hannan, thank you very much.
Today we are discussing European Union federalism. I have a question for you, Ian.
Yes.
If Europe will become federal, do you think that this will be of any help to Europe in terms of political understandings?
Yes, actually, I think that in a federal union, diverse political benefits would also follow, whereby a more effective and influential EU within world politics would become more visible. Despite being a much stronger negotiating and trading union, by holding more influence in global terms, it would be more able to promote the citizens' concerns and interests, while simultaneously becoming a stronger influential actor in global institutions like the UN, WTO and IMF. In addition,
you mentioned here that sort of the European Union in terms of political understandings would also be able to counteract and interact with other global organizations. But do you think that sort of it would also, having a federal union would also give a voice to small states?
A promotion, yes.
Yes, because a lot of European Union members, in fact, are considered as small state actors within the international community.
Even like Malta.
Exactly, Malta, and we have the Balkan states, we have Cyprus, and we have a lot of candidate countries who are also
doesn't endure so much power.
Exactly, especially with regards to the European Parliament, the number of seats are limited. So do you think a federal union would be able to provide a voice for these countries?
I think, in fact, that it would be more an advantage for those states which traditionally are considered as weak in promoting their message and interests, particularly for those small states like we mentioned, Malta and Cyprus. It would be more favorable for them to carry influence in the EU. Rather than remaining weak policymakers, they would be given the opportunity to vote over several policy issues, while simultaneously increase the opportunity for citizens to take part in the same decision-making process.
Christian, do you agree with what Ian Borge is mentioning over here?
Yeah, I definitely agree with that point, that smaller member states will have a voice in the European Union, mm-hmm. in the whole federation. However, on the other hand, in contrast with that, in my opinion, I think that still the situation can remain, that smaller states remain like being ignored by bigger member states because they are weaker than them, obviously.
Sort of the influence of the bigger powers within the European Union would not diminish.
Yeah, in fact, would diminish the influence of the weaker states, of the smaller member states.
And do you think that this argument would contribute to a higher level of European Euroscepticism?
In fact, very true, I think, yes. One will take a look at the survey done by the Eurobarometer in 2009. One can see that the level of Euroscepticism in Europe itself is very, very high. Mm-hmm. For example, everyone will find that the highest Euroscepticism level is in Latvia, and then following the UK and Hungary, with only 25% to 32% viewing membership in the EU as a good thing. Mm-hmm. Also, one can find
it is interesting to note that both Latvia and Hungary have joined the European Union quite recently in 2004, and there's still a high level of Euroscepticism.
Yes, yes, very true. Also, one has to say that the belief that this country has benefited from the EU membership is lowest, and in fact it's below 50% in countries such as the UK, Hungary, Latvia, Italy, Austria, Sweden, and also Bulgaria. And the very important point here is to know that the UK, being a very large country in the EU, mm-hmm. and we know that even although not only giving something to the EU, it's also gaining, it's still very impressive that that the percentage is below 50%, that citizens, UK citizens...
And as we heard in our interview, as Daniel Hannan quite rightly pointed out, even British MEPs within the European Parliament tend to be quite Eurosceptic, even as the United Kingdom in general is quite Eurosceptic.
Also, this is not all, because also a significant minority of 36% do not tend to trust the European Parliament, which is something very important here.
Do you think that they do not tend to trust the European Parliament because it has limited powers when compared to the European Commission and other institutions within the European Union?
Yeah, that's one point, in fact, that's true. I mean, but the other point as well, apart from that one you mentioned there, I think that still in nowadays, national parliaments are enjoying more respect and giving more priority from the citizens themselves. So they see like national parliament can do much better things for them as a citizen of a country, mm-hmm. let's say Latvia, for example, rather than the European Parliament of bothering what's happening in Latvia and trying to, establish better situations for the citizens.
Mm-hmm. So do you think it's possible of having a European Parliament with greater powers that would have a greater control over the European Union as a 27-power-strong country?
I think, in my opinion, personally, I think that would be kind of a bit problematic. I think just one parliament for all the member states, obviously, if Europe will become a federal union, it will be a bit difficult to function because, obviously, as we said, national sovereignty is not done away with, especially if you consider, like, ex-communist countries that nowadays are part of the EU. After all that struggle they passed through to get their independence from communism itself, they're not quite that happy and ready to done away with.
Their independence is quite recent. So.
Yes.
Ian, do you have any comments on what Christian is saying?
Yes, I think that, as a conclusion maybe, that federalism in the EU would bring diverse positive results. While cooperation and justice between states become more viable, at the same time, as already observed, it would be a union prevented from wars, whereby diverse political and economic developments would follow. It would also give a voice for those states, which usually are considered to be mere policymakers, subsequently by conjoining all these elements together, would raise the strength and powers of the EU as a player in the international field.
Thank you very much, Ian Borch and Christian Tante, for joining me
today.
Thank
you very much.
Certainly, this was an interesting discussion which we had on European Union federalism. I thank our listeners for joining us today. I remember that It's Debatable is a conjoint initiative between the Malta International Relations Student Association and the International Relations Department within the University of Malta. I thank Dr. Kalea Aragonese, the head of the International Relations Department, for her interest and for her support in this initiative. Remember, stay tuned to It's Debatable and Campus FM. Next week we shall be discussing poverty, and I will be having with me in the studios Elizabeth Mardia and Luca Caruana, who are both international relations students. I, Darren Katkuti, thank you very much for tuning in to today's show.
It's Debatable.